All right, and welcome back to another edition of Dark Matters Radio. And I have a very special show today, a gentleman that I had met last year through my very good friend Dwight Schultz. That gentleman is Mr. Dean Haglund, whom you probably know as that computer geekized guy from The X-Files, Ringo Langley. Now, surprisingly, as I found out last year, Dean is quite an aficionado of computers. And Dean, I want to welcome you to Dark Matters Radio, my friend. How have you been?
Excellent, Don, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, as always, a pleasure. You know, when we met last year, Dean, over in Burbank, we were at the Barnes & Noble coffee shop there getting all coffeed up. Yeah. You had a lot of surprising things to tell me. So let's start off with the X-Files.
Yes.
Now, this is a worldwide phenomenon. It ran from the early 1990s up till just several years ago.
Right.
You got to miss it, man. You got to miss that.
Well, it was a lot of fun, you know, and everybody was so much fun. So you kind of miss the family aspect of it, but you know, it's great that you don't have to stay up till 5-6 o'clock in the morning in the rain.
So, up in Canada, most of the shooting was done in Canada, wasn't it?
That's right. The first 5 seasons were in Vancouver, and then the last 4 were down in Los Angeles.
Well, what a lot of people may not realize is that you are actually Canadian by birth.
That's right, born and raised, and I went to my theater training was in Canada, and so originally I was just cast locally on The X-Files because the gunmen were just going to be sort of a one-day thing on the show, and then...
But they took off.
They took off, and they took off because of the Internet. I mean, those were the early days of the news group called Alt TV X-Files, which was a very active community. And the Chris Carter and all the writers would lurk in that news group. And when the gunman showed up, the news group went crazy going, aha, this proves that Chris Carter and the writers are on here because they're reflecting our culture with the gunman.
Well, you know, there's something you may not be aware of, but Chris Carter, years ago, right about the time that The X-Files was premiering, and I was an avid fan, both my wife and I, both watched that religiously weekly. He used to haunt a number of UFO symposiums and conventions that we were a part of, and it was my understanding that he actually used to subscribe or get UFO magazine, which we of course publish.
That's right. He, I think he had those in his office. He was an actual. He kept up on all of those things, and I think I recall seeing a UFO magazine or two around the office.
Well, you know, Dean, now, when you guys were doing this, were you also doing the original first X-Files conventions?
Yes. As a matter of fact, let's see. I did my very first convention, I think, would be 1995, 94. So that was in early second or third season, which is when the convention started.
Well, you know, back in, I believe it was 1993, and I still have the paperwork here.
Uh-huh.
The very first X-Files convention, I was the featured speaker on UFO topics.
Oh.
And it was down in San Diego.
That San Diego one. Yeah, that was the very first one.
Right, and you know what I remember most about it?
What's that?
The people that put it on, Creation Entertainment, mm-hmm. had a guy come in that was allegedly a vampire researcher. You remember the early X-Files episode that dealt with alleged vampires?
That's right, yeah.
Well, this guy spoke for like an hour and a half. He was only supposed to talk for an hour. So halfway through my talk, which was supposed to be going on an hour, one of the guys came out and cut it off right there in the middle.
Oh, no.
And I got to tell you, Dean, I was just a little pissed off about that.
I'm sure any of the fans listening right now will know that when they go to a Creations event, they're a little more dedicated to the schedule than to the fans.
Yeah, you noticed that.
I put that politely.
Yeah. Well, hey, now speaking of symposiums, conventions, and what have you, you were this past weekend, and of course today, which is, as we're doing this interview, is July 26th, you were just at the Comic-Con convention.
That's right, in San Diego, which was the largest one yet. 100,000 people just on Saturday showed up. That doesn't include all the other days. And then there were 40,000 exhibitors and volunteers. So the fire marshals actually tried to shut down the entire San Diego Convention Center.
I'll bet that went over like the proverbial...
Yeah. Well, it was impossible to do. I mean, it didn't get done. They cleared out the Warner Brothers booth for 2 seconds, and then that was about the extent of it. So then they stopped registration. So everybody stood outside and was pressing out in the heat till around 5, 6 p.m. when they let more people in. But, you know, every year the thing has gotten larger and larger, and every year they say, well, how will we, you know, grow? And I can never fathom how they get this big, so.
Well, now, when you go to these things, now, you yourself were responsible for a series of graphic novels, were you not?
Yes.
Which, for those people that don't know what a graphic novel is, ladies and gentlemen, that's a comic book.
Well, yes, I still call them comic books a lot of the time. I'm working on a couple graphic novels right now, but at the convention, I sell a comic book called Why the Lone Gunman Was Canceled, which was our spinoff from The X-Files.
Right.
And I drew and wrote that myself, and you can still get it at my website, which is deanhagman.com. And so I'm there, and I know lots of other artists, and I wrote a couple things for DC as well. So... It's a natural fit to go to the Comic-Con. But the Comic-Con has sort of expanded beyond comic books. It's now like a pop culture. There's action figures. There's website shows that you like. There's film. There's Japanese horror. There's trading cards. And then all the major studios come and launch and announce their new movies and show trailers and clips in all the panels upstairs.
Okay, Dean, we've got to take a very quick break.
Okay.
We're going to tell everybody what they're listening to. Incidentally, if you just joined us late, this is Dark Matters Radio. I am your host. My name is Don Ecker, and joining me through the miracle of modern communications, Mr. Dean Haglin, a.k.a. Ringo Langley from The Lone Gunman. We're going to be back in just a second. Dean, hang on. And we are back. Dean, you've got a lot on your plate. I know from having talked to you in the past that you've been traveling around the world. You do a lot of foreign travel. You're all the time on the go. You're doing 3 other radio shows today. How do you keep up the pace, buddy?
I got a lot of people helping me, of course. 3 to 4 assistants at any given time, and a lot of yoga, you know. That always helps.
You got 3 or 4 assistants.
Yeah, well, I have one who just manages the conventions and the travel and that sort of thing, and then another that manages the in my production office, setting all that up, and then I have someone for my chill pack, which is my laptop cooling system.
Right, I was going to bring that up.
Oh, you were?
Oh, yes. Thanks, Don. Yes, absolutely. Okay, what the heck?
We'll take that tangent, and then we'll come back to what you're thinking of.
Yeah, this is something that is actually quite amazing, yet it's so simple. You would have thought somebody would have thought of it before. A chill pack. Laptops today are, of course, a necessity. And let me ask you, Dean, what happens when you're out on the road and you got that thing sitting on your lap?
Well, it'll burn your lap is what it'll do. Also, you know, for the guys, how to put this politely, the New England Medical Journal just said a laptop on your lap will actually decrease your chances of having children. So, how do you put that politely? The laptop is, or the ChillPak is a laptop cooling system that you put in your freezer and then put under your laptop computer, and it draws the heat away through a direct application of cold. And it's got a condensation-proof material on it, so no moisture develops, so you're not going to short out your system. And it's insulated along the bottom, so you're not freezing your leg, just the laptop.
Okay, now can I go down and pick this up at CompUSA?
Not this year. We're working on that, but right now it's exclusively on one website, which is chillpak.com, spelled P-A-K, chill, P-A-K, .com. And you just click away, and they're sent to you within a week or two. And before you know it, your laptop's running so fast, you don't even have to have the fans on.
Well, that makes sense, because if a computer is running cooler, it does, in fact, run faster.
That's right, and it also prevents your hard drive from warping. I got my G4 Titanium from Apple personally. They invited us up for the launch of OS X way back when. And I got drunk with all the engineers, and they started telling me all the problems with these laptops. And when I got, they gave me a Titanium G4, and when I got home, I was watching a movie, and halfway through the movie, the whole screen stopped, like everything just locked up. And I happened to have a knee injury at the time, so I had the cold press on my leg, and when I moved the laptop to my knee, the movie started playing again. And my major was theater in college, but my minor was physics and exothermodynamics. So it all came together.
It only made sense. Cold. It cooled off my laptop.
Yeah.
Hot damn, it's working again.
Exactly. And that makes sense. I mean, you know, fans only cool because you have moisture on your skin, and that evaporation is the actual cooling process. In a computer, there's no moisture, so fans are only trying to get cooler air on the outside to warmer air. There's no actual cooling effect going on with the CPU. It's like having an injury. If you sprain your thumb, are you going to put a fan on it, or are you going to put a cold compress on it?
Right.
It's the same idea. So the ChillPak is the only thing out there right now that does direct cold application to the CPU.
So once again, that's ChillPak, C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K?
Yep. P-A-K, that's correct.
.com. All righty. As a matter of fact, when we're back at the Dark Matters website, I'm going to talk to our webmaster about putting a link over there, Dean.
Excellent. Then we'll be linking a ChillPak over the Dark Matters.
Okay.
Works out perfectly.
Hey, buddy, I'll tell you what. Now, Langley,
yeah,
the lone gunman, computer geek, along with Frohickey.
And Byers.
Well, Byers, yeah, but he wasn't always such a computer geek.
No.
You and Tom Braidwood, your characters, you guys had a big rivalry going on, and that was one of the really delightful things about those episodes you guys were in, and of course later, The Lone Gunman. Was that by design, or did that just work out that way, Dean?
I think that was kind of written in. On set, Tom and I actually didn't even realize our characters had a rivalry till I sort of stepped back and looked at the episodes and went, oh yeah, we're always kind of competing. But it was always, you know, in fun, and there was never any actual rivalry on set or anything.
Oh,
like that.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, but that was by design. The writers put that in just to, you know, ramp up the geek talk, as it were.
Well, you know, the episode that actually stuck in my mind was the one where they went back to when Mulder first met you guys.
Mm-hmm. Usual Suspects.
Right. Byers was working for the Federal Communications Commission.
Yes.
You guys were selling blue boxes, I guess, at this thing. Is that
computer
right?
Computer trade show, yeah.
And you kind of twisted Frohickey's arm and made him say that your kung fu was better than his.
That's right.
What was that all about? Now, for those people that may not have seen that, Was that Computer Geek Talk?
Well, you know, this is the interesting thing. That sort of became a catchphrase there for a couple of years. And people would have me sign that on autograph, you know, photos and that sort of thing. And I went back to the writer, Vince Gilligan, who, you know, wrote many of the episodes and wrote Home Fries, and, you know, fabulous writer. And I said, okay, my kung fu is the best in reference to computer hacking. Where did you hear that computer hacking was referred to as kung fu? And he goes, I didn't. I just, you know, made that up. He thought, if I were a computer hacker, what would I call all of this that I do, you know, encapsulated? And so he just came up with kung fu as, you know, a funny reference to everybody was kung fu fighting.
Yeah.
And that stuck. And now from what I've seen, that there's actually hacking referred to as kung fu on the web.
You guys started a trend.
And I owe it all to Vince.
Well, how far back does your computer days go?
Wow. Let's see. I had a Hyperion in 89 with an Amber monitor that I shorted out.
Oh, buddy, you just answered my question. I got you beat.
Well,
I bought my first system in 87.
Wow.
Dinosaur.
Okay. Yeah, totally. But I was working on computers back in, like, high school, where you had to dump cassettes in, and then, early Wolfenstein and that lunar lander where you had to figure out how much fuel to use versus the gravity.
Right,
and
right.
It always blew up and, you know, it always crashed. But all of those that you had the cassette tape that you had to load on your program with, that's how far back my computer thing goes.
Well, now, this is a great place, I guess, to segue into a question that I know a lot of people are probably thinking themselves right now. The X-Files, one of the reasons that it was, I think, in my opinion, so popular was not only the government conspiracies that everybody was involved in every week, but the other thing that caused Mulder to live daily was the pursuit of UFO information and aliens. Now, you know, many of the most favorite episodes had that theme in it. Now, how do you feel about that subject?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I talked to, doing a lot of research for my character, I've talked to plenty of UFO researchers. I've been a guest speaker at the UFO Expo in Santa Clara, and in fact, I'm going again this year in October. So, October? Yeah, I think so. October 8th and 9th. For those of your listeners in Santa Clara or San Jose, and what I've seen is that, yes, you know, statistically, the universe is so large, it would be an impossibility for there not to be life on other planets, in other solar systems and galaxies and that sort of thing. But are they coming here and, you know, landing and shining a flashlight up, you know, our ass or anything? I don't think that may be necessarily true. So I mean, that book ends somewhere in there. Statistically, it's an improbability that we're the only ones. I don't believe there's that many alien hybrid baby things happening.
Yeah.
Abductions with the anal probe thing. I don't know how much of that goes on. Because, you know, there's many sightings now in Mexico, and yet there's no reports at all of any abduction there.
Well, you know, Dean, talking about Mexico, and I remember this vividly, it goes back, it really started in July of 1991, when the sightings and a lot of videotape and photographs began flowing out of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That was during a solar eclipse. Now, what always struck me as highly, highly unusual, our press, for the most part, never covered that. And
never.
It's still going on now.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was someone at one of these UFO experts that actually had one of the most interesting alternative theories that I thought that still, you know, was about reverse engineering of UFOs found. that if the military has a covert operation where they reverse engineer UFOs and manufacture these things, that after 91, the North American Free Trade Agreement kicked in, and it was actually cheaper to make them in Mexico and test fly them there. and that's why you saw more sightings, because they're all the test flights of the the military vehicle.
Well, I got to tell you, that's the first time I've ever heard that. But
I know, but when you think about it, that actually kind of makes sense. It's, you know, if you actually are trying to do a cost saving effort to make these zero gravity high flying machines, you would do that in a foreign country.
Now you just gave me an idea for another explanation on why so many Mexicans are coming up north of the border. They don't want to get abducted down there and get that anal probe. Now, yeah. I bet you didn't think of that.
No, I didn't. So I don't know, you know, what happens when they cross the border, but I don't even want to think about it.
Well, now, what, I got to tell you, you know, Schultz and I go back a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
he's a great guy.
Oh, yeah, he's funny. Now, I can recall asking him many, many moons ago, Dwight, you've done all these science fiction shows, a lot of them involving, you know, aliens and various things. How do the majority of people that you've worked with feel about this subject? And he said, well, you know, Don, he said, surprisingly, most of them don't give it any credence. Now,
yeah.
Is that what you found when you were on the set of The X-Files? Did a number of those folks think that it was basically, to coin a phrase, crapola?
I think we didn't actually really discuss it that much, but I know a lot of the actors who came in who were just working for the day or so would talk about it. Some believed and some didn't. You know, Gillian Anderson sort of was more into it than David was, for sure. It was the exact opposite of the characters.
Sure.
And but it was the writers, you know, who would research these things so heavily. And they were, I think they purposefully gave a neutral front. But when you go into their libraries, in their offices, you know, they weren't the regular screenwriters' libraries with, like, how to write a screenplay, how to sell a screenplay. None of those books were on their shelves. They had, you know, the ancient rites of the Mithra religion and sideshow freaks of the 1900s. You know, all of these, with such a wide range of stuff that was in their libraries on their shelves.
Sideshow freaks of the 19th century?
Yeah, that was one of the books I believe Vince or Chris had. That, you know, you wouldn't have a whole episode about that, but there was that episode, Humbug, right, that had Jim Rose's Freak Circus all in a town in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Living there. So all of these...
That was the third season, I believe.
I think so. And one of my favorite episodes. I mean, those poor guys, the Enigma with the puzzle tattoo, had to sit in that cold barrel of water, like, all day. And he didn't complain once, which is quite amazing.
Well, you know, back in those days, I had a very popular radio program that I was doing on a network called CRN. It went nationwide, coast to coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I even had Academy Award winning producer director Bob Wise come on my show.
Oh, wow.
And I tried to get Chris Carter. And you know what? I couldn't get to him to invite him on the show no matter what I did.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was incredibly busy. I mean, not only was he creator of the show.
Well, I even had a direct line to Howard Gordon.
Oh, yeah, who now works on 24, by the way.
Yeah.
And Howard, well, Howard was a producer on the field. Like, he was on the ground. Chris stayed in Los Angeles and was continually writing. I mean, I don't know how he kept up that schedule, actually. It was pretty mad. Because he would... you know, running a series takes a lot of work, but he also insisted on having a hand in writing every episode, too. So he would be at the computer and, you know, running all interference and that sort of thing at the same time. So it's understandable that he couldn't do your show. I'm sure he regrets it because he tried to do everything.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Hang on just a second, because we're going to have to take another quick break. And when we come back, more with my very special guest, Mr. Dean Haglund. Okay, Dean, we are back.
Here we are.
And you're there? I'm here? Oh, good. Excellent. My God, everything seems to be working out fine
today.
Technology's
phenomenal.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Now, you know, when you make all these personal appearances, is it usually in connection with, because you have so many other things that you've been involved in, is it mostly dealing with your character on The X-Files?
Mostly, yeah. But now a lot of it's ranged into a farther field, because I have developed a relationship with a lot of these guys who, you know, I originally started just talking to for personal research into the character. So, you know, people like Jordan Maxwell and Dr. Roger Lear, those kind of guys who are big in the UFO community. And now I'm pleased to be being invited, just because I bring a wider range, and I also do stand-up comedy, so I'm a lot of this stuff is so deadly serious, and there's hard to get some levity into that. So I actually, at the conventions, improvise an episode of The X-Files live on stage and bring people up, and it's quite hilarious. I worked with Ryan Stiles and Colin Mochrie from Whose Line. Whose Line Is It Anyway, for 15 years.
Is that right?
Yeah, that was my basic, when I first started out, I was in a theater group called the Vancouver Theater Sports League, where Ryan Stiles and Colin Mochrie were. And I did 10 shows a week for 4.5 years, just doing improv. So now I do a one-man improv show involving aliens and X-Files, and it's fun and it's hilarious. And so I get invited to these other conventions now, and to do that sort of thing.
Well, I gotta caution you now. Having been in this field for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
you gotta be careful with the belief structure of some of these folks.
Well, yes.
And the other thing is,
yeah.
you'll find out that the real serious ones have a really hard time with a sense of humor. I manage to upset them occasionally.
Oh, well, see, that's the thing. I'm not actually making fun of their belief system. I'm making fun of the X-Files itself.
No, I'm making fun of their belief systems.
You are. Oh, I see. And you've upset some people, have you?
Oh my God, yes. Oh, my God, yes.
Like who?
You want to put me on the spot now.
I'm trying to find out. Like, where did you cross the line? What happened? Did you get, like, an angry letter? Or
angry letter? Oh, my God. I've received death threats.
Have you?
Oh, yes.
I had no idea.
Oh, my God, yeah. You see, the thing about about UFO Magazine, I've done over the years a number of exposés on some of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy in particular, who incidentally died several years ago in a shootout with police down in Arizona, a guy by the name of Cooper, William Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I did the very first expose on this guy back in 1990, and oh my God, it was rough there for several years.
Wow.
Yeah. And he wasn't the only one.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, there are some, you know, I'll be real upfront. There are definitely some whack jobs out there.
Wow, is that what you call them in the magazine?
Oh, I have called them whack jobs, yes.
Yeah, I can see that getting some people riled.
But, you know, hey, look at my background. Yeah. I was a cop. I was a detective. And when I got involved in this field, and that's a story in itself, Dean, and I believe I told you this last year.
Yeah.
I would treat it just like I treated any criminal case that I ever investigated. And, you know, if somebody is smoking you along and you find out that what they're saying is not true, why in the world would you believe them in the future, you know?
That's right. And so that that level of credibility, I find, I agree with you that some people aren't, you know, that would then want, there's the idea that you want to believe something and that you will you will actually sacrifice some of your credibility just for the sake of that belief.
Oh, my God, yes. Like, for example, let's just do a hypothetical. Now, you do your one-man stand-up on stage. Let's you and I do a hypothetical.
Okay.
Okay, the government. Ba-bum, the secret government, okay, back in 1964, sent a dozen human beings to the Zeta Reticulum star system. They called it Project Serpo.
Really?
Have you ever heard of that?
No. Project Serpo.
Serpo.
With a C.
S-E-R, Serpo.
Serpo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Project Serpo. And they went there and they lived for several years on the Zeta Reticulum star system. And finally they came back in the late 70s. And the ones that came back, they had several die and several stay on the alien planet. And then they came back. And they were locked up on a government base until sometime in the mid-1980s. And how do we know all this? Why, it was released by a guy called Anonymous. And there are people out there that are buying this hook, line, sinker. Now, my question would be, hypothetically, let's say there was a secret government project that sent aliens or sent humans to an alien planet, and finally they came back. And this was all ultra, ultra top secret. Do you really think they would let somebody leak that information?
Yeah, not bad. I'm just looking at here at Wikipedia. Oh, yeah, the Zeta Reticuli, look at that. I have not heard of this at all.
Oh, yeah.
And that's so.
Hey, I'm a font of information, my
you
friend.
You certainly are, sir. Very impressive. I must look this up further. But yes, I mean, the thing about, and this goes to a general conspiracy theory thing, is the tough thing about conspiracy theories is that I can claim anything to be a conspiracy. You know, I can say the big pen controls my mind, and you say, well, that's not true, and I go, well, see, that's the proof that it's working, that you believe it's not true. You know, and so...
And that's why I'll be wearing my tinfoil hat.
Well, the tinfoil hat, you know...
To block the rays, Dean.
I'm not sure aluminum blocks the rays. I heard that causes Alzheimer's, so I'm worried everyone who wore a tinfoil hat might be bad. But the point is that, conspiracy theories as a lump category is kind of a demeaning factor, because what were conspiracy theories that became best-selling books, not 10 years later, but the Bush administration by, you know, Carl Bernstein and everything. So those authors, you know, suddenly gave something legitimacy that was lumped into a conspiracy.
Well, let's look at one of the greatest conspiracy theories of the 20th century, the assassination of JFK.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And
over 400 plus books have been written on that murder.
That's true. And, you know, who do you believe? Can you fire off six shots with a, what's that kind of gun?
An Italian Carcano.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it was actually three shots in 4 point so many seconds, and actually that particular firearm was considered, even during World War II when it was being issued by the Italian government, they used to call it the humane rifle because it was such a piece of junk. that's true.
Yeah, that's how you heard that. And it was impossible to kill anyone with that. And how do you run down six flights of stairs and get to the movie theater in 2.5 minutes? That's what I tried to do. When I went to the book depository, you know, if you ever go, first you have to go through a huge metal detector. Then they take you up to the sixth floor and there's all these displays. But you can't actually stand at the actual window. They got that sealed off in the plexiglass thing. But I thought, I'll try and run down the stairs and get to the movie theater in 2.5 minutes. And
Did it work?
Well, no, they got that sealed off too. I thought, you can't do anything fun at that book depository museum. But you can take a limo ride. There's somebody offering a limo ride in a 62 open-air Cadillac, and they'll take you down the actual route with a little jumpsuit. That's a little sick, I got to say.
Yeah. Maybe a little.
Yeah, I don't know if he's still doing that. I think maybe the Dallas Business Commission ran him out of town.
Well, the X-Files even covered that particular conspiracy.
Yeah, they sure did.
The cigarette-smoking man was the shooter.
Was behind it. And he also fixed the Oscars and to make sure the football team never won the Super Bowl, the Buffalo Bills. That was quite funny.
Well, let me ask you, Dean. Now, it's obvious to me because I've been to many Star Trek conventions. There are a lot of people out there that really, even now, get just totally worked up over Star Trek. Is it like that with the fans of the X-Files?
It is. You know, they tend to be not as, let's see, how do I say it? Vivid in their recreation.
Fanatical?
They're fanatical, but they're not as they're not dressing up as the characters per se. In that, if they do dress up as Mulder and Scully, they're just wearing a trench coat and have a flashlight. So there's not really much to do in the way of uniforms or makeup or that sort of thing. They can't put on funny ears or anything.
Well, you know, my very first cell phone I bought many years ago at Radio Shack, and this thing is about the size of a concrete block, okay, and it weighs about the same.
Yes.
I still have that phone. Now, I probably should take it to an X-Files convention and sell it to one of those guys.
Yeah, you'd be totally retro with that. Yeah, those were those giant ones that looked like you're calling in the airstrike in Vietnam. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You still have that?
Oh, yeah.
Can you even get a network on that thing now?
I have no idea. I'll never forget when I had that boy, when I first got it, I was tripping. This was the height of technical prowess, you know, this thing.
And what year was that?
This is about 93, I think.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why I remember that. You know, were you around here for the 94 Northridge quake?
Actually, I was still in Vancouver, but I was flying down here a lot at that point. I just missed that by about a week and a half.
Well, the day that happened, the morning, I should say, the wee morning, my wife and I were sound asleep in bed. It was roughly, if I recall, about 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, 4:30 a.m.
And our two dogs were both in sleeping on the bed, too, and we were literally thrown out of the bed by that quake. Now, our power and phone system were out for almost a week.
Right.
And if it wouldn't have been for that cell phone, I had that cell phone then, I was able to call family I had back on the East Coast to let them know that we were okay, because otherwise we didn't have a telephone to use. But I remember I used that Radio Shack brick
to call in the time of an emergency.
You betcha.
It's really amazing. You know, the
I think too, if I recall, Dean, the cost for a minute to talk on that was like $9,000 or something.
Well, that was my next question. Yeah, what were you paying for that early early system? I remember I purchased an Iridium phone, which was a global telephone system where they launched 19 satellites just for this one phone system, and there was only 500 subscribers.
I remember that.
Yeah,
were one of the original 500.
I was one of the original 500 supporting a $19 billion satellite launch. and it was really ridiculously expensive. I believe it was $54 a minute at one point.
Oh, my God.
If you the cost of the phone plus everything worked out to about $54 a minute. I didn't keep that phone for long.
No.
And now I think they let those satellites just burn up in the atmosphere.
$19 billion worth, huh?
Yeah. You think they could have rented them out to, DirecTV or something. But.
Well, you know, there are a lot of fans out there of the X-Files that today are still advocating trying to get the Lone Gunman to come back. I should say Lone Gunman Files as opposed to X-Files.
Right.
Have you guys been following? I would imagine you have been.
Yeah. It's been really surprising. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you guys were killed off. and all that sort of thing.
Right.
But we point out that our bodies were never seen in the coffin.
I know.
And with the level 5 quarantine, you know, chrome coffin, it's supposed to be fitted to the size of the person so that there's no airspace. And if you look at that funeral scene, all 3 coffins are the same size, even though one of the gunmen is shorter than the other 2. I'm not saying which one.
No.
I think we can figure it out. But yeah, so there is this this growing fan base for the Lone Gunman, particularly now that it's out on DVD, and the weird coincidence of the pilot episode.
Oh, my God. Now, you know, that, as a matter of fact, the other day, getting ready to interview you today, I was on the net doing some research on the Lone Gunman. And, you know, honestly, I had forgotten that very first episode.
Yeah.
Now, this is, talk about your conspiracy theories, Dean. This is a great place to bring that in. What was the story on you guys having basically foreknowledge? I guess there are people out there that would say you had foreknowledge of the 9/11 event. Now, of course, that's impossible unless you're...
Unless you're part or in on it. Yeah, for those who don't know, the pilot episode of The Lone Gunman, we stopped the plane from flying into the World Trade Center.
Also known as the Twin Towers.
Also known as the Twin Towers. And the reason that the government was doing this in our pilot was to start an international war on terrorists. Now that the Cold War was over, they had to keep the arms race as a... fueling the economy. So so this happened, we shoot the show, you know, the plane comes in from Staten Island as opposed to the other way, and it's at night, but other than that, pretty much all the things are similar, and it's kind of really creepy watching it now. And then it aired, and then 8 months later, September 11th happened, and I even personally forgot about it, and I was watching, you know, all the news that day, and some of the writers call me going, are you watching this? I go, yeah, why are you calling? And then it dawns on me, oh, yeah, how weird is that? And I was freaked out, but the writers were especially freaked out.
I'll bet they were.
Yeah, yeah, and they, you know, they either tapped into something psychic or but none of them claimed to have heard anything or gotten a message from any government agency or anything like that. So I think the conspiracy just goes so far as the weirdest coincidence in Hollywood history.
Or, as others would say, synchronicity.
Synchronicity, that's right. That you knew that was already happening out there.
Well, do you keep in touch with your other 2 cohorts, Tom Braidwood and...
Bruce Harwood.
Bruce Harwood?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're both up in Vancouver. Tom is directing and producing other films, shorts, and he just did a children's educational series onto video, which is a scary thought. And Bruce is doing a lot of theater in Vancouver and writing plays.
Oh, really?
Yeah, keep it really busy. Yeah, so if anyone's up there in Vancouver, you can check him out. I don't have his play schedule in front of me, but you can check your...
Well, give us his phone number and we all can give him a call.
Sure, absolutely. I'm sure he would love that. I think he has his own website, too. He'd probably email him through that.
Really?
Yeah, BruceHardwick.com, I think.
Well, you know, on a personal level, just because I enjoyed it so much, I would love to see The Lone Gunman come back. Do you think that there's any possibility in the future that that might ever happen?
You know, I think there is, actually. There seems to be, you know, a mounting, growing support for that. And now that the DVD is doing so well, everybody's realizing how great a show that was. And, you know, technically it was a show like many other shows that the timing was just slightly off. That, you know, it was ahead of its time.
Would Harwood and Braidwood both be available if you guys were to receive an offer?
Probably. I mean, in theater doesn't pay that much in Vancouver, so I'm sure Bruce would be happy to dump it at a drop of a hat. Yeah.
What about the other 2 characters that were on there? The young woman and the guy that, and I'm sorry,
yeah,
I don't...
Jimmy Bond was his character.
Jimmy Bond, right.
Yeah, and the actor's name was Stephen Sneddon, and Zuleika Robinson.
Who incidentally was, to coin a phrase by Frohicke talking about Scully, she was tasty.
Yes, she was. She was incredibly beautiful. And now she's on the HBO series Rome. She just got cast in that. And Stephen Sneddon is doing various projects. But he's also, I got him involved with this charity thing called El Faro, which is helping out an orphanage in Tijuana. And we would go down and, you know, work and play with the kids and all that sort of thing. But I brought Stephen with me one time. Said, I do this really great thing. It's a lot of fun. And I do it occasionally. And he really got into it, where he started working in other orphanages and coordinating.
Really? That's great.
Oh, my gosh. And he was just, you know, he has such a warm heart that now he's, I think he's down there almost every second weekend. Working with the kids in the orphanage, and it's really, really phenomenal. Kind of makes me feel bad that I would just go, you know, once every second month or so. But he is doing that and balancing that with his career and having such a great time.
Well, Dean, with just an inkling of how busy you are, and I mean, I'm dead serious, ladies and gentlemen, when I say that this man is busy. What's on your plate for the next few months?
For the next few months? Well, let's see. I fly tonight to Canada and then over to New York and London. I'll be in Birmingham for the NEC conference doing a show with Gary Jones from Stargate, where we're recreating a Star Trek episode, improvising a Star Trek episode.
Oh, no.
Yeah, live on stage. We did it in Germany 2 months ago, and it was a huge hit. And so I play Spock, and he plays Kirk. And we are both improvisers from that same theater company, Ryan Stiles. Now it's Stargate and X-Files does Star Trek, if you can imagine that.
Yeah, I can.
And then I'm doing a movie in Hungary that a friend of mine's directing called Madness is Catching. And then I've written two movies that we're getting our funding for, and producing a vampire movie as well, which I bet I'd like to talk to you about, Don.
Oh, you know about my novel.
I know about your novel. I'm going to London to go see that that cemetery that you talked about, where the two 16-year-olds had that hallucination.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm planning to go look at that and see that whole thing get creeped out.
Well, that reminds me of something, and let me bring it up after the show, after we complete the show.
Okay.
But you're right. That and incidentally, I have a very, very dear friend who is one of the most noted paranormal researchers in Europe over there. You may be aware of him, John Spencer.
Of course.
And John did some legwork for me when I was in the middle of writing my novel, and I address that particular case in Chapter 5 of Past Sins. This is going to sound like self-promotion, but...
Not at all. Listen, I've been old radio show. Why not you get something?
But this is a very strange thing, and Highgate Cemetery, which is the cemetery that is in question, where this case happened. There's an organization that take care of that provide for the upkeep called the Friends of Highgate, and they get very upset when anybody mentions vampires there.
Is that true?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Now, you realize that Bram Stoker, when he wrote Dracula, that he used Highgate Cemetery is the backdrop for when Van Helsing and Arthur Holmwood and the other guy went in to find Lucy Wisteria that had become the vampire?
Yes.
That all took place in Highgate.
You're kidding.
No.
See. So it's odd that the Friends of Highgate would be not very welcoming to that.
Oh, no. They take a very violent position.
Do they really?
Oh, yeah. Now, one of the primary investigators of that case, who today is a bishop of the old Catholic Church, not Roman, but the old Catholic Church.
Pre-Reformation? Catholic?
Yes, yes. A fellow by the name of Sean Manchester.
Wow.
Was one of the principal investigators of this particular situation when it was happening back in the early 70s. So the story goes, and I don't know this for a dead fact, but he's not even welcome to go to Highgate.
How do you keep out, what are the Friends of Highgate standing guard for Sean Manchester?
I could be. I don't know.
Wow.
But, you know, he was the fellow that that caused all the notoriety to be brought on this case, where there was, according to the case itself, which I'm very familiar with, an actual supernatural creature that inhabited that cemetery until allegedly Manchester staked it in 74.
He allegedly staked it, or did he say?
Well, he says he did, but you know, it's like anything when you're talking about something as far out as an actual supernatural vampire.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just have to throw allegedly in there.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, wow. And he had a book, too, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure does. I have a copy of it. I tried to get a hold of Manchester because I wanted to interview him. Mm-hmm. And he's very, very hinky with outside investigators.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't know what to think about that. Mm-hmm. I tried to get in touch with him through John Spencer.
Right.
But he was not willing to discuss it.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
I guess he's probably been, you know, I'm sure something like that would be pretty life-altering, and you would probably want to go back into some sort of privacy after that.
Well, yeah, but he's done a lot of interviews on the BBC. He's done a number of television programs. As a matter of fact, he even came on the Art Bell Show a number of years ago.
Oh, really?
To discuss this, yeah.
Wow. So he's not that publicity shy?
No, I certainly would not say that he was shy of publicity, but the case itself, well, you can understand. Let's say, for example, you, in fact, were investigating what you felt to be a genuine case of vampiric activity.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be a lot of people out there that are going to paint a big, broad bullseye
yeah.
on you and really go after you. It's kind of like being a UFO investigator.
Kind of the same.
So.
And so did they paint a bullseye? I mean.
Oh, he received tons and tons of criticism. And then there was another guy who, during the initial case, a fellow by the name of David Ferrant, who later spent several years at the Queen's Pleasure and one of their prisons over there.
Right.
Do you know about the Ferrant aspect to this case?
No, I don't. Ferrant is F-A-R-R-E-N-T.
I believe it's A-N-T, but he's easy enough to find on the web. But at any rate, he was originally billed as one of the vampire hunters. He was busted going into Highgate with a mallet and stakes and God knows what all. And later, he was, if my memory is serving me correctly, he was busted for disturbing a corpse.
Really?
But there were some very weird things that happened during the initial aspect of this case. They found a dead woman inside the gates of Highgate with her head missing that some tried to attribute to the vampire. There were all kinds of animals that were found in there, dead and bloodless. So, you know, the case itself was highly unusual, but I used it to what I think was pretty good effect in my novel.
Right, which I quite enjoyed, by the way. Thank you.
Did you read it?
I did read it. I think I might have not gotten all the way to the end because I left it in my luggage. But every time I travel, I pull it out and have a read. So I'm going to enjoy it again on my flight over to London.
Well, God bless you, Dean.
You, Don.
Well, you know, now, you're going to be in, did you say Santa Clara in a couple of months?
Yeah, at the UFO Expo in Santa Clara. It's the big one that happens every year. And I'm going to be there with Gary Jones, and we're going to be improvising episodes of Star Trek as a evening entertainment after the awards.
Well, you know, I'm gonna endeavor to come to that. Do you have the date for that? Because I know there are a lot of people out there that may also be very interested in that.
Yeah, this is an indication of how busy I am. I actually go to my own website to see where I'm going to be, which is rather embarrassing. But I believe the actual event, here I am, just getting in there, and my appearance is saying that I am at the UFO Expo in Santa Clara, California, September 9th and 10th of 2006. So that will be the weekend, September 9th and 10th, right after DragonCon. So come on down. It's open to the public. It's lots of fun. It's you can go to UFO Expo. I think what is their website specifically is the Bay Area UFOExpo.com.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you now. Every time you go away and then return, it's got to be like you're meeting a brand new woman with your wife. Does she travel with you much? Or?
No, she doesn't. She's very understanding about that. So,
God bless an understanding wife. Let me tell you what.
Very rare. So, yes, it's quite funny that way. But, well, but the travel, the coming back, I mean, the joy of the internet and Skype and all that stuff now is, it seems like you're only just at the office when you travel.
Well, Dean, I think we've just about reached the end of the road here, my friend.
Excellent, Don. It's been such a pleasure.
Hey, let me once again get those websites out for you.
Sure thing.
Your ChillPack website. If you've got a laptop, if you travel, if that laptop burns up your lap, you want this. It's called a ChillPack. And developed by none other than Mr. Dean Haglund. Go to chillpack.com. That's chillpack.com. And Dean, your own website also has a link to that, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And if it doesn't, I should be ashamed of myself. But yes, there it is right there on the top.
And your website is DeanHagland.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
H-A-G-L-U-N-D.
H-A-G-L-U-N-D, right?
Yes, that's
Dean
right.
Haglund.
Can't go wrong there.
What if they put in Ringo Langley?
Wow, you know what? I never have done that. I don't think I purchased that one. And now that you've said it, I better go buy it.
Go get it quick, my friend.
Yeah, gee whiz. RingoLangley.com, what do you get?
I don't know.
Never not found. Huh.
Well, then thank God you've got time.
I got time. Please, all listeners, hang on till I get that down.
Okay, once again, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Dark Matters Radio with your host, who is me. My name is Don Ecker, and this episode we've had none other than Mr. Dean Haglund. Dean, I want to take this opportunity to not only thank you, but please, let us do this again.
Absolutely, I would love it. And even maybe we should get together and hang out at Starbucks again.
Hey, it sounds like a plan. Ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, remember this, keep looking up.